Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Recovery Cast. Find us on the web at myrecoverycast.com. Today's episode is the first of two that tell the story of the writing of the NA basic text. This episode could be divided into three parts. In the first part, Boyd and Chris, our interview subjects for these two episodes, share a little about how they got involved in gathering the material for this story. And then they give an overview of the history of literature written by addicts for addicts that preceded our fellowship's book. The second part is a discussion of the Little White Booklet, which began in 1954 in a form now referred to as the Buff Book, and evolved to become the italicized portions leading into a number of the chapters of today's basic text. And finally for this episode, and extending into the full next episode, we tell the story of the writing of the basic text itself. We share some audio clips from those involved and try to capture the spirit of that effort that had a slow start in the early 70s and really took off in the late 70s, leading to the eventual approval of the manuscript as our fellowship's book in 1982. I'm Ron. My partner in these interviews is Dave. And we started off today with some sharing by Boyd and Chris on how they started on their adventure in studying this history. Boyd starts us off.
I went down to San Antonio, Texas, to the World Convention that was happening down there, and I pretty much started looking at the history display case and came away pretty enamored and actually ran into a guy named Matt from California, and he was telling this woman that you could buy this stuff on eBay. And so, you know, that was kind of like, ding, the light went off. And so I came back and started looking for old NA literature on eBay. And a sponsee of mine, a guy named Walter, I was telling him all about it. And he says, I know a guy you need to meet. And so he arranged that Chris and I meet together. And so we met over at a little coffee house on Wednesday nights from 5:30 until about 7 o'clock. And Chris was much further along this history journey than I was. And he actually, you know, the first few months he would give me things like Jimmy's 20th anniversary talk. And he'd say, go listen to this, and then come back and, you know, we'd share about it and stuff like that. And so Kermit was doing these history talks. And so we ran into him somewhere. I had an old comic book collection that I'd held on to since I was, you know, probably 11, 12 years old. And so we went up to Kermit's place, Chris and I, and Chris was in the process of scanning all the documents he could, and Kermit and I were trading old NA literature for comic books, and which was pretty interesting. So Kermit disappears one time about 1 o'clock in the morning. And he comes and he drops two banker's boxes on the floor. And he says, this is the mother load right here. And I said, what are you talking about, Kermit? And he said, he had to really explain it to us very, very slowly. He said, these are Joseph P's archives. And they are the archives of when he was the treasurer during the 7 World Lit conferences that created the basic text. And inside these boxes were just what Chris and I termed raw data for the basic text. There was a raw input for the basic text. There were gray forms in there. There were partial gray forms. There were many different conferences, different chapters of the input and review that they went through in there. And Kermit came down to Raleigh to do a history presentation. So Chris got the bright idea to scan these documents. And so he asked me to call Kermit and ask him if he'd bring the stuff down. And I did. And Kermit did. He said, yeah, I'll do that. And at that time, we only had flatbed scanners. That's all we knew of. We had yet to learn of high-speed scanners. And Chris and Amy and I sat in Chris's office with as many flatbed scanners as we could, hooked to many different computers, and we scanned and scanned and scanned while Kermit was here. But it was very obvious that we were not going to get through those two boxes. And so I very humbly and meekly asked Kermit if we could keep them and finish scanning it. And he just kind of looked at me and he says, you know, he says, that's really my life right there. And I said, I know. And we'll do you right by it. And so Chris and I scanned all over a period of about 4 months. We scanned all the stuff that were in those two boxes. And we actually cataloged all the stuff for Kermit. We indexed it. We gave it back to him in probably 12 nice notebook binders, all cataloged and indexed so he could find it easily and quickly. And really, you know, it was actually a very nice presentation. But we actually got the benefit of that because we got all the digital copies of it. And it was really amazing, guys, because we would be sitting at the boardroom of where Chris works. And after an NA meeting, we'd call people in to come look at this stuff all around the boardroom. You know, it was all over this big, huge, I guess, 20-foot, 15-foot desk. And, you know, it would just give you goosebumps because this was the very beginning of our book.
The basic text presentation is really where we went from just meeting as two people interested in the history of Narcotics Anonymous and talking about it to actually getting the opportunity to look into actual primary documents. And we did a lot of work on, digitizing them and then trying to preserve them. And the digitizing was really around this desire to make this information available to people in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous and other people who are interested in this. So it was really kind of a significant time. And then, as Boyd mentioned, we began doing the same with Bo's archives. And what was nice about that is there were audio cassettes from the World Lit conferences as well as pictures. And so those became really important, items that made it into the presentation. And in approaching January of 2009, we were asked by the Upper South Carolina area of NA to do a history presentation at their convention in Greenville, South Carolina. And we decided that what we had the most information on was the basic text, and that became the subject that we focused on. So it's just kind of a long way of saying that this presentation in particular marks our first kind of venture into real primary document research, which served as the basis for our first presentation.
We asked Chris and Boyd to use as the organizing principle of this episode the PowerPoint presentation that they have given at various conventions and events on this topic. So throughout, they'll be referring to a presentation that the four of us are looking at during the discussion. The visuals are left to your imagination. But a few times I'll break in and describe what we're seeing. Chris starts off with the first slide containing a quote.
The quote that we chose comes from the sixth edition of the basic text, which was published in 2008, and the sixth edition was. And it says, many of us have never known recovery without the basic text. Many people just kind of take it for granted that they've come into Narcotics Anonymous and this piece of literature has always been there. And that wasn't the case.
We're going to kind of give you a broad overview here of literature that was written by addicts for addicts, you know, pre-basic text. On March 14th, 1949, a woman by the name of Bobby B., who is the secretary for AA General Headquarters, writes this man called Clarence B., who is the secretary for the Addicts Anonymous Group in Lexington, Kentucky. And she tells him, we're mailing you a small complimentary package of literature. We do not have anything written about drug addicts who are looking to Alcoholics Anonymous to help and maintain their recovery, but you can, in reading our material, substitute the word drugs for alcohol.
Interesting. So here, she says reading our material, in reading our material.
Yeah. Yes, it does, doesn't it? So
That was a nice find, because you still hear a lot of oral stories of people who talk about getting into recovery who didn't have a basic text, and they describe we would substitute drugs in place of alcohol within AA literature. And so we've heard this, as I imagine many of the listeners have heard this recounted numerous times. And this is the first time that we see kind of this actual suggestion being made, you know, for somebody with a similar problem, substituting the word to modify AA's literature so that it could benefit somebody else. We also think it's just really remarkable that Bobby B. really took a very sympathetic approach and wanted to be of help to those in the Addicts Anonymous group in the narcotic farm in Lexington, Kentucky.
The next slide that they put up is entitled Our Way of Life. It says, by April of 1949, the first piece of literature for addicts is created by Addicts Anonymous. It is adapted from the Alcoholics Anonymous pamphlet, A Way of Life.
And this was discovered by Chris and I up in the AA archives. And we'd had some people, some other students of NA history, who were pretty blown away by seeing this, as we were too.
This is exciting. I'm seeing this for the first time. It's got almost like a stylized Our Way of Life title. And then it's got the address, Addicts Anonymous Men's and Women's Groups, U.S. Public Health Service Hospital, the address in Lexington, Kentucky.
Now, what I wanted to say is that due to the detailed and persistent efforts of Dave, we now have a picture of A Way of Life, the actual pamphlet that came out of Birmingham, Alabama, that served as the basis for the Our Way of Life, which makes sense, because Addicts Anonymous was initiated by Houston S., a member of Alcoholics Anonymous who got sober in Montgomery, Alabama. And it just fits that he probably brought this pamphlet to the group and said, let's use this as a template or a framework for writing our own literature, Our Way of Life.
Chris, I've done a little analysis between that version of A Way of Life, the Way of Life which came out of Cleveland, which was a compendium of Cleveland Plain Dealer articles. And this is very different in structure from that. You could not say that it was copied. If you take, by my reckoning, if you take this Way of Life, you can trace it to the Lexington, Kentucky Our Way of Life, and then the Danny C. Our Way of Life. And the other thing I want to mention in this is...
Let me guess. The number of times it says disease.
It does. I mean, I think that's just a point I want to make there. They are using the word disease, and that's a big issue in recovery history, is when and where this whole notion of disease comes from.
If you listen to our interview with Bill White, Dave and he had gone back and forth a bit on when each believed the notion of addiction as a disease had been introduced. That explains some of the chuckling here. The next slide is a picture of a typewritten page from Our Way of Life with one paragraph enlarged to be called out by Chris.
We have this in here because to give an example of how the A Way of Life was modified in the Our Way of Life, and how they tried to basically create a bridge between what alcoholics could identify with and what addicts could identify with. So what they end up saying in here's the idea that somehow, someday, should they do this or that, they will be able to control and enjoy their drug taking is the great obsession of many addicts. So basically, those kind of mental gymnastics, if I can just figure this out, I'll be able to use without any consequences. Alcoholics Anonymous calls this thinking wet. Addicts Anonymous calls it needling ourselves.
And that, by the way, the idea that they should they do this or that, they will be able to control and enjoy their drug taking is the great obsession of many addicts, is almost a verbatim quote from the AA Big Book.
Yeah.
Imagine that. Well, anyway, by February of 51, we know that Danny C. had left Lexington and left the mentorship of Houston S. and had gone to New York and had started the very first 12-step meeting for addicts outside of an institutional setting. And one of the vehicles that Danny C. chose to use as to get the message out was a pamphlet that he penned called Our Way of Life, An Introduction to N.A. And it's not a big stretch of the imagination to say that he, you know, got that from Lexington. What's interesting to me is some of the time frames that Danny's there, and it's not 100% conclusive, but there is an outside possibility he might have had a hand in creating the first one too.
So yeah, he seemed to have left Lexington right around the same month and year that Our Way of Life was first published.
Let me just tell people what we're looking at here. We're sort of looking at the inside cover of this Our Way of Life pamphlet. It's subtitled An Introduction to N.A., and there's an acknowledgments page. What does that say?
It's they want to express their appreciation to the National Advisory Council on Narcotics, Inc., narcotic in parentheses, it says Narcotics Anonymous, and they're also thanking Brigadier Dorothy Berry, Director of the Correctional Services for the Bureau of Women of the Salvation Army, for permission to reprint this pamphlet and make it available for distribution to the inmates in our department. So this was actually, this particular pamphlet that we're looking at was printed at the Rikers Island print shop.
I have an original, and mine is not printed at the Rikers Island print shop.
It was printed elsewhere. Okay, now in some of the previous episodes that we've talked about all of this stuff, we've talked about some of this history. As I understand what we're doing right now, we're saying in the history of the basic text, there are written materials that precede it that you could look at sort of as the text that the fellowship was using at that time. This one goes back to the New York wing of the family, using this Our Way of Life, which is a sort of a booklet, right?
Yeah, I'd put it like in the context of literature by addicts for addicts, Ron, okay, is the way I would frame it. Definitely pre-basic text. And it's, you know, this actually, Our Way of Life came out before the Buff book did, or the very first piece of literature on the West Coast, NA2, that was made in L.A.,
The Buff book dates back to 1954.
And this is the very first piece of NA that started on the West Coast. And it was done by Jack P., Cy M., and Jimmy K. But this is where we see for the very first time that we admitted we were powerless over addiction. And it's over a condition, that we're powerless over a condition as opposed to a substance. And the backstory of that is that that Cy had wanted it to be we were powerless over either drugs or some sort of substance, and Jimmy had wanted it that we were powerless over addiction, and there was a lot of fighting over it. But obviously Jimmy prevailed. And that happened. But, you know, I'm going to actually pass the ball to our host right now, because he actually has a story about this. Would you like to share, Ron, about a conversation you'd had?
Sure, I can share about that. I'll just note that we've talked about it in a prior episode also. First of all, let me say, as I look at the screen here and I see we admitted we're powerless over addiction, I'm really curious to know when the word our was added in there. And if you guys are already planning on saying something about that, that would be interesting. But maybe, do you have any idea when?
I don't, no.
I don't either. It involved doing a little digging.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a significant shift in emphasis from we admitted, you know, like when I'm describing for somebody the difference between the AA and the NA first steps, I'll often, with my hand pointing, I'll say one real conceptual difference is the original first step says we admitted we were powerless over that, and you could point to something on the table, you know, the NA first step says we admitted we were powerless over this, and you sort of point at your gut, you know, point at your head. And this one is somewhere in between. We admitted we were powerless over this thing, you know, but it doesn't quite personalize it and internalize it the way the step does today. But anyway, when I first moved to Southern California in 1985, that was the year Jimmy died, he was doing his very last trip around the meetings in the Southern California, in the San Fernando Valley, taking his cakes for 35 years, which is sort of the local custom there. When you hit your birthday, you go to several meetings that week, and you just sort of let the newcomers see that it works. And Jimmy came to my home group, which was the Burbank Sunday night meeting. And at the end of the meeting, Jimmy and I were sitting in the back of the room because I had come up to him to introduce myself and say, ask him if he remembered talking to me on the phone from when I was in Fargo, and I used to call and talk to him. And of course he did, which kind of surprised me a little bit because, you know, I knew I was just one of the many people he talked to, but it sort of goes to something about Jimmy that he kind of had us all cataloged in there. And he remembered even the issues that we talked about. What I was curious about, because by then this narrative about the first step of NA was becoming really kind of prominent. It was just not that long after the writing of the basic text. And it was sort of a point of pride with those of us who are really kind of pure NA guys that our first step made this shift. And so I asked him outright, did you guys do that on purpose? Did you, because I really, in my heart of hearts, I wondered, you know, did they sort of stumble on it? And then it became really significant later. But he was very clear that no, they discussed all kinds of alternatives, and that when this one came up, they were just really taken with it, or he was really taken with it, and the whole group agreed that this is the way to go. So I guess it was very intentional on their part to having looked at a lot of alternatives.
I think it's awesome. I mean, he hit the nail on the head, that's for sure. And it's amazing because it is a very big distinction. It's, you know, for the first time now we're powerless over a condition as opposed to a substance.
Yeah, and now I'm not going to be able to quite stop obsessing on this question of when the word "our" came in there, because I think this version takes it halfway there, or maybe more than halfway there. But that little pointing right at myself, we admitted we were powerless over our addiction, not addiction in the abstract, was another big leap, I think, in this language.
Well, it'd be interesting to see when it appears. Does it appear like in the next one, the little white book of 62, 63, or 61, 62?
You remember when we looked at the Soledad pamphlet, that the mm-hmm. Soledad pamphlet was worded this way also, which caught my eye at the time.
It's in there by the 62 little white book.
Is it? Okay, good. Yeah. I figured, I was hoping you were looking there.
Still on the screen are pages 4 and 5 from the 1954 Buff book. Chris goes on to point out a few other things on page 4.
So Ron and Dave, you guys are appreciative of language and nuances of it and so forth. And really, if you read a lot like what's showing here on page 4, we thought we had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. Right, so we start hearing these things that appear in future literature. We place their use ahead of the welfare of our families, wives, and children. But slight differences, you know, like the way that it just focuses on wives and so forth. And I like this one, it says, "Here we have come to realize we are not moral lepers. We are simply sick people. We suffer from a disease just like alcoholism, diabetes, tuberculosis, heart trouble, or cancer."
Some of that language, referring to diabetes and tuberculosis, alcoholism, diabetes, and tuberculosis, was some of the language removed in the 1986 version, because it was saying we don't suffer. I mean, because the discussion among us went, we don't suffer from a disease like alcoholism. We suffer from that disease called addiction, put in its larger context. And maybe some of those other analogies would have carried, but they pulled all of that out. The other thing that was removed at that time was, you remember that version, the version that used to be read at meetings when I was new, it said, "Such cunning enemies of life were narcotics and sedation." And now it reads, "Addiction is such a cunning enemy of life."
It says it right here in the Buff book. "We realized we were slowly committing suicide, but such cunning enemies of life are drugs and narcotics that we'd lost the power to do anything about it."
Oh, that's interesting, because I was just going to point out that this one says drugs and narcotics all over the place. And in the 1986 modification of the Little White Book, that was one of the things that we really were attempting to kind of find and remove, is anytime they said something like drugs and narcotics, or "such cunning enemies of life are," and then name those, you know, start to name those drugs. So that you can see that those references to, in this case, drugs and narcotics, isn't that interesting?
Well, you've also got it here right on page 5. It says, "We found out how to live a life free from the uses of narcotics and sedation."
Okay.
So you've got that phrase, you know, right there together.
I'm reasonably certain that language about diabetes, tuberculosis, that was showed up in earlier Way of Life pamphlets.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Okay. The thing about the Buff book that's interesting to me is that, you know, Chris and I talk about how, you know, very early attempts, you start having, well, basically it's plagiarism from AA, where this particular Buff book right here is, although it's not as, this one's a very much a breakaway from the other ones we've seen, that there's a lot more original thinking in here. Although, according, you know, thankfully because of Dave now, I've started to take a look at a lot of the phrases that are in here. And also I wonder too about, basically the structure of this book. The other interesting thing about the Buff book is it does not have the traditions in it. It came out in 54. The traditions were adopted in 50. The 12 and 12 hit the tables in 53, but this does not have the traditions in it. So
I'm getting totally sucked into the Buff book. So if you can indulge me for a second. It's 8 pages. It has information on the inside cover, outside cover. The inside cover says, "This booklet is dedicated to those who suffer from narcotics and sedation addiction."
Interesting.
And it starts off with, "Do you need Narcotics Anonymous?" And it's a set of 20 questions. And it either has using or fix throughout all the questions. "Do you fix because you are shy with other people? Do you want to fix the next morning? Do you fix to build up your self-confidence?" And then it goes into, "What is the Narcotics Anonymous program?" That's a header. And then the last, towards the end, we see after the 12 steps are presented, "Does this sound like a big order? We don't expect you to do it overnight. You didn't become addicted in one day. Easy does it." And the last thing that's interesting is, and it's not the last thing, but the last thing I'll comment on, is page 8, the final page, it has "Just for Today," which is probably the most unedited piece of writing that still exists today.
Yeah, it really is. It's very, very close to what we hear today. And I'll just say for our audience out there in podcast land that if you want to see a copy of this Buff book, you can go to narchive.magshare.net and look under recovery literature, and it'll have a copy of the Buff book in there. So,
One more thing that caught my eye in the Buff book on page 4 is it says, jail did us no good. Medicine and psychiatry had no answers for us. Everything else having failed, in desperation, we sought help from each other. And then somewhere, in the 1986 change, what used to be read at meetings is it said, jail did not help us at all. Medicine, religion, and psychiatry had no answers for us that we could use. That was changed at that time to say whatever it says now about many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry, but none of these methods was sufficient for us. So it was kind of toned down a bit from saying it didn't help us at all. And it, like to say religion had no answers for us was a bit of a stretch in terms of the what some people might say is their experience.
Cool. So now we go to the next publication of the NA literature, which is the Little White Book, which was written in 61 or 62. We've never really been able to determine an exact date. But this was written after Cy left NA and pretty much gave the keys to Jimmy, and Jimmy wanted to start over again. And to my knowledge, it has pretty much Jimmy's writings in it. Chris, do you care to confirm that or add to that? I mean, I've heard some of Sylvia's, that Jimmy and Sylvia had written some of it.
I would just say that what kind of stands out, actually going back to the Buff book and modified slightly in the 61 or 62 White book, is the use of the word clean. So we see it in 54, but we see it paired in there with sobriety. And what we see by 61 or 62 is that they've dropped sobriety. It falls under the What is Narcotics Anonymous program. And, it says in here, we're a group of addicts who meet regularly to help each other obtain and maintain our sobriety and to stay clean. And that's in the Buff book. And then by 61 or 62 says we are, and again, what's kind of interesting, switches it a little bit from a group of addicts to we are recovered addicts who meet regularly to help each other to stay clean.
Yeah, we kept the recovered in there up until, was it 86, Ron, or did they do it and they change it out in 81?
I think it might have actually been in 86 that change was made. I think it was in that 86 edit.
Yeah, I think so too. Because that's when they did the majority of editing to it. What's important to Chris and I that we really like to show about this, though, is that Jimmy was so insistent upon the traditions being followed that he made a specific point of putting it in the NA literature at that time. And so you go to the next is a Little White Book that was published in 66. And this one is the first one that has stories in it. It's got 6 personal stories. And we put this in here because of the language of the day was one woman's story. I'm an addict and an alcoholic, you know. And we just put it in there to show people that in 1966, that was very much accepted.
And I guess also, even though step one was worded powerless over addiction, it wasn't as commonplace at that time for people to say, well, addiction means everything. So there's really this need to kind of emphasize kind of alcohol and drugs. As she says in her story, it was never very hard for me to say I was an addict, but it really was hard for me to say I was an alcoholic.
Up to this point, starting with the discussion of the Buff book, we've been talking about the evolution of the Little White Booklet, which was included in what is now our basic text. Now we're going to start getting into the beginnings of the project that ultimately produced the full-length Basic Text.
We now jump next to a to 1972, and this is the really very first sincere attempt to start work on a hardcover book. And Greg P. actually writes a letter to the fellowship asking for input so that we can write a book like AA's Big Book, but it'd be defined, you know, be specifically for NA.
I'll just interject here that we're looking at a slide that says the Board of Trustees authorizes work on a hardcover book. This is from a 1972 letter to the fellowship. I'll just read it. It was written by Greg. And what I'm looking at here is a handwritten template for that letter. Dear Blank, we need your help. As you know, the Board of Trustees has authorized the preparation of a hardcover book entitled Narcotics Anonymous to enlarge the present pamphlet of that name. We plan to have a much expanded description of the drug addict, the drug dependency problem in general, and our program of recovery, what it is and how it works. We hope that this new book will fulfill the same needs as AA's Big Book, Alcoholics Anonymous, which has been so important to our recovery. However successful AA's Big Book has been for us, we desperately need to present our program of recovery and our way of life in terms which are meaningful to the newcomer who cannot identify with alcoholism. How many have died because of this lack of identity? Can we forget our primary purpose? We need a vehicle for our program and a cohesive base upon which NA can grow.
It comes from the World Service Office Book Committee, which actually sends out a letter. And the understanding is there wasn't a lot of response to this in 72. They tried, but, you know, NA was still relatively very small.
At this point in Boyd and Chris's presentation, they discuss some other literature that was written back in 1976. A number of pamphlets were published that year, some of which, such as Who, What, How, and Why, and Recovery and Relapse, ended up in the Little White Book and then in the Basic Text. But in the interest of time, we're going to move ahead now to the preparations for the writing of the Basic Text.
So that kind of brings us up kind of through the evolution of literature for addicts and within the Narcotics Anonymous Fellowship, although there's certainly a lot more detailed kind of analysis and review that could be done. But we're gonna move into kind of our first audio clip that we share with people when we do this presentation.
The reservation, well, maybe I can blow a little weed, you know, every second Tuesday of the month. Nobody be any wiser. It won't hurt me. Or I can take a few pills now and again when I'm down the beach or when I go visit my aunt somewheres. I get away with it when we know we can't. But the big AA book brings out the same idea, and we laugh at it, about the jaywalker. And it's exactly the same way of thinking. The jaywalker who would continually run out from the street in front of cars, in front of fire engines, in front of trolley cars, just for the thrill of beating them. See? Eventually one day he got hit, landed in the hospital. After a couple of days he gets out and he does the same thing again. You see, this guy is nuts. And yet this is exactly what we did. We keep doing it again when we know we can't win.
So the reason that we play this clip is because, you know, we ask people, does anyone know who that is? And some people will know, some people won't. We'll say this is Jimmy Kay, you know, looked at as by some as the founder or by others as one of the founders of Narcotics Anonymous. And we ask, you know, when do you think this was recorded? And it was recorded in the early 60s. And we said, what would you think if you heard somebody in your NA home group quoting the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous as part of their experience that they were sharing? And most people say it would be unheard of for somebody to be sitting in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in the United States quoting something from the Big Book and drawing an analogy to it for addicts. And we use that to kind of emphasize that, you know, before the creation of a primary textbook for Narcotics Anonymous, members of NA borrowed from existing literature very heavily. Even, you know, Jimmy Kay referencing the Big Book, talking about it at a meeting. You know, we've had the opportunity to see Jimmy's Big Book, and it's just, it's interesting seeing how many folks have signed it and kind of what some of the messages are. His father, you know, signs just the first inside cover, "Dear son, many happy returns of the way you and your family and AAA." It's a little hard to read, but from Pap Kinnon. We see Gene Haig, who recently passed away. Jim, with all the love of one NA for another. From Gene, we see Penny Kennedy and Bob Barrett listed in here having signed it. His brother, Jerry, writes, "Neither one of us knows what caused our problem, but I'm sure we both know what cured it. Thank you, your brother, Jerry." And he put, "One week old tonight, 7/1/58. And then interestingly, on page 134, which is right next to chapter 9 of the Big Book, The Family Afterward, it's signed by Lois Wilson, co-founder of Al-Anon and wife of Bill W. We could easily start this presentation right here without any of this backstory or context, but we look at what we consider to be a spark for a book by addicts for addicts that occurred at the 7th World Convention in San Francisco in 1977. This is where Bo S. meets Jimmy and Greg. And Bo had traveled from Atlanta to the 7th World Convention to find out, really to find out what was happening about a book, you know, to try to get some answers. And he meets Jimmy and Greg P. And this is really the process for the book really begins here.
They had the World Convention planned in San Francisco. So I made a deal with this other guy, Tommy B., that he would go out there, and if he couldn't go, I would go. But one of us would go out there. And wound up, we both went. Thank you. So we got to San Francisco, and you are getting to know me a little bit tonight. Can you imagine, let's see. I was 29 and 30 when I got clean. So I was probably like 33 years old. So it'd be a much younger version of me walking around trying to look nonchalant, asking who's working on the book. You know, I would say, like, it's nice weather out here. I like this convention. Who's working on the book? I mean, I was about as subtle as a brickbat. And they kept like, go over here, go over here, go over here, go over here. And I kept going wherever I was told. And within about three or four intersections like that, I wound up at registration where I met about half of the people in World Services in 15 minutes. Jimmy Kay, Chuck Skinner, bunches of them, Sally, Jack Whaley, Bob Barrett, and Greg Pierce. And so Jimmy says, "Hey, Greg, this guy's from Atlanta, and he's asking about who's working on the book." And so they sent me off with Greg. They pawned me off on Greg. And so we hit it off. I mean, he had read a lot of science fiction, and I was science fiction. So I said, like, well, what's the score with the book and all? And he says, well, nobody work on it. And I said, is that right? Why not? And the saying was that addicts in recovery can't write. So I said, so does that mean they've tried and failed, or that they haven't tried? He said, well, mostly they haven't tried. I said, well, who can write on this stuff? He said, well, any member. I said, well, I'm a member.
All right, now go ahead.
And, you know, emblematically in that little conversation, you know, I was thinking about all the dead people and the horrible way we die. And, you know, writing's not really that goddamn hard. So anyway, with his from the top, more or less clearance, I started writing some stuff when I went home. I mean, he took me down to some oldest meetings in the world, you know, in California and Hollywood and all that next week. But mainly, I felt like I had permission, you know. And I felt like if I did something, that I could get other people to do stuff.
And so you just really hear that one of the themes that's kind of driving the basic text is one, you know, we have something that other people are dying for. And we, despite whatever limitations we may think we have the ability to share our experience, strength, and hope. And then we get to Greg P. And Boyd, do you want to introduce Greg?
Okay. Greg was a member of the Board of Trustees. He also, along with Jimmy, wrote the NA Tree in 1975/76, which was our very first service structure manual. Greg wrote IP number 9, Living the Program. He also wrote IP number 12, The Triangle of Self-Obsession. His stories in the basic text was titled, I Was Different. I believe it's in the first through the fifth. Sadly, Greg passed away in April of 1999 with 28 years clean.
That date, by the way, April 29th, 1999, happened to be during the World Service Conference that year.
Was it really? Wow.
I think the actual process started, at least for this attempt, but actively started in San Francisco. I mean, the things that led up to that, the writing letters, the looking to people, the encouraging people, the phone calls and everything else, those were all setting the stage. I really believe the actual process started in San Francisco in 1977 at the 7th World Convention. And it grew from there. I want to read a letter that I think is real indicative that Bo sent me. In December of 1977, this follows, we first met at the World Convention in San Francisco. Bo came down with me and spent a few days at the house. Here's a letter, and I think this letter really speaks to some of the spirit of the basic text, of the process. Dear Greg, guess who bought a typewriter? I hope you have a nice Christmas. This is December 16th, 1977. Please say hi to Lois and the baby. Hope to see you next year. I've gotten off to a rolling start with the writing. I've started umpteen pamphlets and worked on a few notes for the NA book. My friends here know of my efforts, and I hope to get a few of them together soon for input and discussion. Hopefully this will take place here and elsewhere. Thank God it's begun. At this point, I feel we have to involve as many people as many as possible, and make sure we cover all points of view. Involving people might struggle the effort and controversy, but I really trust the spirit and believe that we'd be poor servants to leave them out. Somehow, if we could get our best minds working on this in harmony, I just know it would strengthen the gut of the program. In my thinking, it has occurred to me what we're up against, like, is NA a cure for addiction? How to help doctors learn to treat or react to addiction? I would hate to see any valid point of view left out. Also, I would hate to see any great length of time elapse without some progress. Please write to me, my friend, your friend Bo.
The audio is from the Madison, Alabama History Conference. They recounted the history. So anyway, both Jimmy and Greg encouraged Bo to start, you know, requesting input. So in January of 79, Bo sends out a letter to the fellowship requesting input. And here in it, he says, we realize that some may be skeptical about this effort, but we're really not doing this for selfish reasons. And he emphasizes people who could be helped are dying every day from our disease. You know, we need a book telling the story of recovery in Narcotics Anonymous would make our program more available to us. And it's interesting what's on here. It says the World Service Office Literature Committee. So now it's not the World Service Conference, it's the World Service Office Literature Committee, and it's Bo's address in Marietta, Georgia. Now, the little backstory to this that Bo told me was is that Jimmy called him up one day and asked him to put out a letter to the fellowship requesting info for the book. And Bo said, you know, Jimmy, I'm not really quite all that comfortable with that because I'm not a world-level trusted servant. I'm just, you know, a guy over here in Atlanta. And Jimmy says, oh, no. You're on the World Service Office Literature Committee. And, you know, and Bo was telling me that he kind of said, I am? When did that happen, you know? So, you know, in April of 79, Bo gets elected the chairperson of the World Lit Committee. And Bo's actually he's the second chairperson of the World Literature Committee. So you can see how young the fellowship was at the time. But this is where it really starts to take off, is right here. Bo gets, you know, going very, very quickly, and letters start going out to a lot of the newsletters that were going around the fellowship. He would write to the main line in Northern California.
The slide in their presentation here shows a picture of the mainline newsletter, and Boyd reads from it.
We now have literature committees in Venice, California, San Fernando Valley, California, Wichita, Kansas, Scranton, PA, Atlanta, Georgia, and prospective committees in Minneapolis and Miami. The literature conference is scheduled for October 6th and 7th in Wichita, Kansas. Please come. We found another little thing in here that I thought was very interesting. It says the Literature Committee of San Fernando Valley is working on collecting material from where our literature has come from, all our literature has come from in the past. The chairperson of the committee is a volunteer service worker at the WSO. They've already mailed out handouts to make them available to the ASC members and plan to do so, so forth and so on. So we put this in here because at this particular time, the office and everybody are all playing nice, and it's, you know, everybody's supportive, and it's not always that way. So, but at this particular time it is. Now we've got a letter dated August the 21st, 1979. And this is, it says, we all need to attend the Wichita Conference for NA Literature, October 6th and 7th. We'll be here soon. And it says here, I felt like doing a bit of writing myself. It was during this period that I discovered that God wants our book. God, and I, as I understand him, is hungry for NA Literature and has been waiting for years. What's been lacking is a development part of our service structure. So Bo goes on to say, we don't need hundreds of members trying to get others to write. We need hundreds writing.
Yeah, so the basic text is written over 7 World Lit conferences that occur between October 1979 and January 1982. We know from looking at the minutes that over 412 addicts participated, and they came from 25 states and one province. What's not known is the countless other unknown addicts who contributed through local literature committees or just through individual submission. So when we look at what are opportunities for continued research and exploration, it's into these people who didn't come to World Lit conferences but have really rich stories about receiving input, reviewing it, sending it back in, or doing things like meeting together as a lit committee, a local lit committee, and writing what they thought step 8 was about and sending that in and so forth. This is a flyer for the first World Lit Conference, and the theme of it is You Are the Book. What's nice about it is it says, it has the option when you register for $10, I would like to stay in an NA member's home. And we interpret this really to mean that what's happening is the fellowship is trying to make it as accessible as possible, knowing that it may be a financial burden and financially prohibitive for somebody to travel a far distance and then have to figure out where they're going to stay.
Yeah, I'd like to break in at this point and mention, too, that Please understand that this committee that Bo is heading is self-funded, that it is not funded by the World Service Office like it is today. And the only reason is because the World Service Office just does not have the money. It's a very simple thing. I mean, in 79, I think they had a grand total of sales of $10,000 and, you know, much less profit off that. So it's not that they would not like to finance some of this. It was just they don't have it. And so anybody who went to these conferences, even if you're a trusted servant, it was all done at your own expense. And so that's just a one ingredient of the sacrifices that were made so people could get NA a book.
A point I see here is that this is a calling together of anyone who could arrive. Pretty much it was open to anyone. You had $10, you could register, you could find a place to stay, and you could be part of writing this book. That's novel, as I understand it. I mean, if you look at the AA Big Book, the text is written by one man. Contributions are made to the story sections, but this is really going to the text itself.
Well, you hear that in the end of the letter where Bo says, we don't need hundreds of people getting others to write. We need hundreds of people writing. So it's a very distinct departure from the way the Big Book was written, really. And it becomes one of the themes of inclusion that we'll actually talk about in the upcoming slides here. We know that 25 members registered for this conference, and 34 showed up. They came from 6 different states: California, Georgia, Kansas, Nebraska, Tennessee, and Virginia. It's a good example of the efforts for this to be an all-inclusive we project, you know.
When Chris here calls it a we project, there's a little backstory there where one of the humorous anecdotes at the time was they were calling this not the Big Book, but the We Book, W-E-E. And it was a bit of a play on words, having a little fun with the distinction between us and AA, and also highlighting the highly collaborative nature of the process by which this book was written.
Which I think is very important for addicts. And an entirely different conversation we could spend a lot of time on is the difference between, you know, alcoholics and addicts. In terms of my observation is that addicts probably experience more alienation as a whole, less sense of worth and value, and more kind of resistance that they need to work through in terms of feeling like they belong or are part of and have something that other people value, you know, that they have stuff of value. And so what we see is really through the basic text, the process of writing it, this real intentional focus on inclusion, which I think is a nice way to combat kind of what the experience is for many, many people in addiction, which is not feeling included, often feeling excluded. And not only feeling excluded in addiction, but often feeling excluded once in recovery because of criminal records and how that impacts employment and housing and the ability to vote and a whole number of things that kind of prevent people from really feeling like they're true citizens in their community. But what came out of this first conference is the handbook for Narcotics Anonymous Literature Committees, which is really kind of a set of instructions for how any local area could set up their own literature committee. And a core value that emerged is that input was encouraged, actively sought, and highly valued from all members of the fellowship, regardless of clean time or experience. So it wasn't like, well, we're only going to listen to those who have worked the 12 steps, or we only want to talk to those who've got 5 years of recovery. It doesn't matter if you've been there a day or 10 years. And this core value shows up in many places. On page 1, right off the bat, it says, every member is welcome to contribute material to this effort. So it's very invitational. We need all types of stories, and yours might be just the one to help your type of addict on page two. We ask all members to send in their material without worrying too much if it is any good or not. And this is kind of an insightful line or sentence. Some of the best is probably in trash cans right now. Kind of recognizing that people, you know, have insecurities about, you know, what they've written and what they're, how it'll be viewed. Another core value on page four, the theme is you are the book. This expresses the fact that so much of our program is in the minds, hearts, and spirits of our members with time in the program. Those not fortunate enough to live in an area strong in the fellowship have to do without. In a real sense, ours is a movement of the message from those who have it to those who are dying for it. It suggests, you know, that if you receive material from somebody, that you could send them an acknowledgement and you could thank them for their literature contribution and let them know that none of us involved are professionals. We are all just recovering addicts with a common desire for new literature for our brothers and sisters still suffering from our disease. We feel we must reach a certain level of freedom to express ourselves, to have a useful and reasonably complete basic text. So we see the word basic text appearing, even though it wasn't necessarily decided upon that that's what this book would be referred to. and it kind of goes on. Profanity. This is always an interesting thing. And we usually ask the audience, what do you think the handbook said about profanity? And what we emphasize, and this is just really just very forward thinking, very aware, very cognizant and, kind of on the part of the folks that attended this literature conference and worked on this handbook. They say stories can include slang, but not profanity, since this would limit the availability of our book in some areas and institutions. So, you know, people are incarcerated, addicts are incarcerated. People who are in institutions, psychiatric hospitals and so forth, you know, if this book had profanity in it, there may be wardens or hospital administrators who would say, no, we don't want this book in our institution or facility. And therefore the addict who may be suffering the most, it does not have access to it. So it was very, I thought it was very insightful that they put this in here. And the other thing is that, you know, the only time that we use profanity in our presentation is in reviewing some of the input. And there's literally a half a sheet of paper that was sent in just handwritten as part of the, you know, raw input that Boyd referenced that was in Joseph P's files. And just starts off, the word fuck should not be used. You know, that's what somebody had written in. We also talk about, it lists a number of additional topics that members might want to work on for future literature. And there's a whole bunch of them in here. These are suggested topics to write on: disease concept, guilt, recovery, there is hope, living in the here and now, finding a higher power when you don't believe in one, powerlessness, sponsorship, beer and grass was no excuse, 90 meetings in 90 days, I didn't know I was sick, positive thinking, negative thinking, complete abstinence from all drugs, the benefits of a clean life, learning how to live clean, chipping, old playmates, playgrounds and playthings, problems in recovery, little old ladies can get sick too, hope in the 12 steps, self-honesty is the key. Self will run riot. A forward. It's not what or how much. I can't, we can. Here's another interesting one. Long form of the 12 traditions of NA. What is normal? I thought I had an emotional disturbance, but I didn't think the dope caused it. 13th stepping. Medicine, religion, and psychiatry seem to have, what do they say? No answers. Turn away, no chances, inventories, 1 minute at a time.
Next, we got the Second World Lit Conference. And what what we've got up here is a pretty much a handwritten flyer And it's going to be held in September the 8th through the 14th. So we're looking at like 11 months later. But what's interesting, it says, come help us write the big book. And, you know, it's got lists of places to call. It was Second World Lit Conference was held in Lincoln, Nebraska, September the 8th through the 14th of 1980. There were 36 members from 8 states and 1 province attended. There were 7, what's really important is there were 7 members also attended that were at the Wichita Literature Conference. And that just lends to continuity. The most important thing that happened at the second Lit Conference were 2 people showed up by the name of Bob B. and Greg P. And both of those were members of the NA Board of Trustees. The reason that's so important is because on the West Coast, there was a lot of concern. What are these whippersnappers from the East Coast up to? And when Greg and Bob showed up at the second Lit Conference, it lended validity to their movement. And or to the movement. I shouldn't say their movement. I should say the movement. And it actually put weight, because here were 2 members of NA's Board of Trustees showing up. Now, Bob B's story is in the basic text titled, I Found the Only NA Meeting in the World. Sadly, Bob passed away June 20th, 2015, with over 53 years of recovery. And in my humble opinion, Bob B. was NA's best goodwill ambassador that there was. Well, an important decision was made at this particular conference. And in Bo's book, the one he wrote called The Story of the Basic Text, Bo actually thinks that this decision was something that Greg and Jimmy had decided and that Greg brought to the conference. But the decision was is that they would take the little white book as the outline for the chapters of the NA Big Book. And so this is pretty monumental, because if you remember back to the 1977 letter that Bo wrote, Greg, he talked about, you know, is NA a cure for addiction? What do we do? How do we tell doctors about this? And so Bo's kind of reaching out there for a lot of different ways to do things, but this kind of narrows it down by deciding, hey, we're going to use the little white book as the outline for chapters. We're also going to add 2 more chapters. One of them is called Just for Today, Living the Program, and another chapter is going to be called More Will Be Revealed. And in listening to the tapes of the actual conference, we learned that Greg actually envisioned that particular chapter as being a version of AA's A Vision for You. So, we've got some incredibly, incredibly rich stories that need to be preserved concerning this particular conference. And, you know, in this point in the PowerPoint presentation, I'm going to introduce you to a man named Jim N., who was actually the chairperson for this particular convention. And he was in charge of setting it up and getting the place and all that sort of thing.
Well, my neighbor offered me a ream of paper and the use of his copy machine, so that wasn't the problem. The problem was postage. So there were 5 of us sitting around the kitchen table at my place one day, and I said, made the comment, well, I guess I've sold blood for, sold plasma to support my aunt. Maybe we can probably make a trip to the plasma center and get a pint of blood is $15 and a roll of stamps is $15. And so the guys all went down the blood bank and sold blood. And we went back to the house and laughing and joking, and each of us had a roll of stamps in our pocket, and we used to address flyers and sent them to every address that I could get my hands on.
I hope that people in our fellowship know about this type of sacrifice and this type of willingness that people were, they were ready to do, you know, to get in a book.
I love that story, Boyd. It just, it really sets the bar, doesn't it, for making sacrifices in service.
Yeah.
One thing I liked was, last time I saw you guys do this presentation, you did the, you did a frame of what you called the blood, sweat, and tears that went into
right
our basic text. And this was the blood. The right. These guys giving and selling their blood to get some money together for the effort. Well, we're about halfway through now. We have more audio snippets and a lot more of this story. Very soon, we'll have the next hour of the story of the basic text.